It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 213 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I get to talk with one of my very favorite comics creators, and that's Bram Revell, who makes a wonderful series of graphic novels called Gorillas. And you'll hear it spelled a couple of times during this episode, but it's G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A-S. I talk with Bram about how he created the series and who the characters are that populate the books, as well as a special announcement about the future of Gorillas that you won't want to miss, especially if you're a fan. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Bram Revell, creator of a series of graphic novels that I really love called Gorillas, and that's spelled G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A-S. How you doing today, Bram?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. I have bought the first volume at a local store, and I really loved it, and then the second volume came out, and I was thrilled about it. And now you've got a third volume coming out. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, it's been a long time coming. Hopefully, the people who read the first two have been patient and are ready for the next installment. Mm-hmm. It picks up right where the last one left off, and I don't even want to say too much about it because I think that so far it's definitely the best of the trilogy. And I guess I can say this. We find a bit more out about the chimps and how they managed to get to being surrogate soldiers in Vietnam.
Great. There's a lot of story to that, I'm sure. But what's funny is the first cover of the book was white in background, and the second one is black. And the third one is kind of this reddish with yellow designs going through it. And you have an outline of the leader of the gorillas, and his name is Goliath, and he's blue.
Yeah.
So this is a very different cover. This is almost a 60s kind of stylish cover to go with it. So
yeah. Well, I wanted to invoke a little bit of the kind of 60s head shop posters because in this episode, things get a little psychedelic. Now, psychedelic's a strong word, but there's some kind of montage elements that are potentially slightly experimental and whatnot. And I also wanted to, like, the designs in the background are kind of like from Cambodia, Vietnam area. So I wanted to have a little bit of both, a vibe that you might feel that it's somewhat from Southeast Asia, but at the same time, somewhat of that kind of psychedelic headshot poster as well.
Now, the one thing I want to make sure people know is that this Volume 3 is supposed to be released on May 18.
Yeah.
Is what the news releases have been saying. I want to try to get that out. Sometimes I hold that information back to the end, and people want to get that right away, so I don't push that to the forward these days to make sure people have it. Now, why don't we talk a little bit about your background?
And
because you were a storyboard artist, or you probably still are, for Adult Swim's The Venture Brothers.
Well, I'm not. I was for maybe a season and a half.
Okay.
And that was something that I actually, a job that I got through Gorillas. I had had some of the pages up at a comic shop in Brooklyn just as art on the wall. And Jackson Publick came in, thought that they looked like good, clear storytelling, and got my information from them. And long story short, I worked with them for a couple seasons. A lot of fun working there, but it's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Animation storyboards. If you want to learn how to draw, do animation storyboards because you'll draw so much that you won't help but get better. But until you get good at it, you're not going to have a lot of free time on your hands.
Right. Right. Now, that Jackson wrote the introduction for your first book.
Yeah, that was just a nice
fun read in itself. You know, he comes out and he says, you don't need the likes of me to tell you to buy a comic book about apes with machine guns. They're apes, for God's sake, with machine guns.
Yeah.
He goes, and that was one of the things that got to me too, was that whole, the basic premise and stuff. But you also have worked on The Bunker, which is another book that I really enjoy.
Yeah, that was just an incidence of them needing a break for a month and just a fill-in artist. Mm-hmm. And since I already work with Oni, mm-hmm. it was an easy enough thing, but I love that book, and it was a no-brainer to be able to jump in and be a part of that. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Joshua Fialkov writes that, and he's one of the, I think, the still up-and-coming writers.
Oh, definitely.
Who does wonderful things. Now, you also did Marvel Knights X-Men, too, is what I understand.
Right, yeah. That was another thing that came from Gorillaz. Axel, it got on his radar somehow, mm-hmm. and the kind of idea behind this iteration of Marvel Knights was getting some more kind of indie guys in to do their takes. Mm-hmm. And so I was just fortunate enough to get a chance to kind of play in that sandbox and kind of, in a little way, do my ode to the old Chris Claremont X-Men from the late 80s and early 90s.
Very cool. Well, of course, when you get X-Men, you've arrived, basically, in the minds of some folks. So that's a good thing to be able to do that and get your name out there.
Well, yeah, it was all very lucky. And it wasn't originally X-Men. At first, the potential was maybe a Daredevil thing. Mm-hmm. But there were, I think, a couple of Daredevil books on the stands at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I guess there's always X-Men. The way I recall, it was at first just throwing around names. Mm-hmm. We started with Daredevil, and then after a little while, switched around, went to a different editor, this and that. And I got Steve Wacker for a little while. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who was like, I think you should do X-Men. Because we talked about it a little bit, and I don't know, he could maybe read on my face that I was a bigger X-Men fan growing up, mm-hmm. and that maybe I'd get more of that nostalgia vibe.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All great stuff. You know, this is the thing to do. I follow your name where I see it, because after the first book of Gorillaz, I was like, man, I got to read more of this guy's stuff. So really,
yeah, I wish that I had more stuff to read. I'm trying to get stuff out quicker just to get it out there. There's no sense keeping it in.
Right. Now, I want to talk about the concept of Gorillaz, because most of us think of Gorillaz, especially with Gorillaz in the book, as being spelled G-O-R-I-L-L-A-S. But to do this, like the Gorillaz, the fighting Gorillaz, the army type things, was very different stuff. And I've got to say, Gorillaz is one of those books that bucks the trends of almost every other book out there and succeeds, I think, splendidly, because it's black and white. It comes out when the time is right. It doesn't come out on a monthly basis. It's set in the 1970s during the Vietnam War, and I don't know many comics today that are set in that area. Most of the things happen in New York City, seems like, anymore.
Right.
So you're doing everything against the trend, and yet you make what I consider to be a tremendous book. Where did you get the concept for Gorillaz from?
The concept, the way I remember it, is pretty simple mashup in my head. I was watching a World War II movie. It might have been Saving Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. And there was just like one shot where the platoon or the little squad of guys were like walking against this kind of bombed out landscape, single file, spread out a little bit. And the image struck me as, it just reminded me of the way chimps would patrol, like from, you know, nature videos, mm-hmm. would kind of patrol their turf, single file, kind of going through the grass. And it was as simple as that. I was just like, chimps, war, not bad. So originally the idea actually was maybe more a World War II based thing. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe it would be kind of satirical and humorous to have Hitler being taken down by subhuman fighting surrogate soldiers. But that vision of it, to me, was a little bit more pulpy. Mm-hmm. Like in that version, I wasn't thinking of it being too realistic. I was maybe thinking, oh, they might talk and it might be like this different vibe. Mm-hmm. But the more I thought about the idea, the more Vietnam seemed like a better place for it to take place. Mm-hmm. Vietnam is a jungle war, so it would make sense to use chimps in a natural habitat of their own. Mm-hmm. It was also a war that we were losing. So it was a desperate war. They were having a lot of casualties, and like it might be a time when they would potentially go for something as crazy as this. Mm-hmm. And also Nixon was kind of like a shady guy. I could see him, you know, giving the green light to something like this. Mm-hmm. And finally, the last thing was the name. Mm-hmm. I finally got the name. Like, a lot of people think the name came first, the play on the words, and that was where the idea came from. But that was actually pretty far down the chain of events. Mm-hmm. But when I thought of that, the Viet Cong employed guerrilla warfare with GUE, mm-hmm. that kind of play on words for the title just kind of sealed it. And then it became much more about a plausible story with a lot of satiric elements mm-hmm. that allow you to make comparisons to humans that mm-hmm. are forced to fight in war. Mm-hmm. It was also a war where the draft was enacted. Mm-hmm. So that's a similar topic or a similar theme about being forced to fight in wars that maybe aren't your thing. Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of the stuff that I really like about the book. There's a lot of depth and a lot of examination of concepts through the various characters. There are times when you get to compare humans to gorillas and humans to humans, as well as amongst the gorilla groups. There's so much interesting going on. I don't want people to think it's like one of those verbose, overthought books. It's not. But you do the storytelling in such a way that we get to examine all these different concepts really clearly, I thought, through this, particularly in the first two volumes, which I've seen. I really love the way that we could examine, not only that, in war, you know, what war's all about. Mm-hmm. All these different things, you know, get examined in an intellectual and yet interesting way, engaging way. So I really love that about the book.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the great things about using chimps mm-hmm. is that since they are our closest animal relative in the animal kingdom, mm-hmm. it becomes a very suitable metaphor or suitable way to compare mm-hmm. the two, because it's almost like they are our savage, our more savage nature. Mm-hmm. And that part of our nature as humans comes out probably most potently during war, mm-hmm. when you become a killer, mm-hmm. a government-enabled killer. Mm-hmm. And so there's even, I touch on it in one of the books, the idea that maybe our warlike tendencies even come from chimps. Mm-hmm. It's not a purely human thing, because chimps in the wild do a lot of similar guarding of territory, mm-hmm. going on patrols, mm-hmm. even preemptive strikes against neighboring squads of chimps mm-hmm. who are too close. And anyone who's seen any nature show on chimps knows that they can be pretty vicious mm-hmm. if they need to be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you do a lot of research? Did you know a lot of this stuff, or did you basically have to research a lot of this stuff?
I had been a fan of chimps leading up to this. The whole thing of chimps, it wasn't like out of the realm of possibility or of my mind. Chimps can be on my mind now and again. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I knew only so much. So I did a little research, probably more research into Vietnam to get a lot of that stuff more clear in my head. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, not an excessive amount, but mm-hmm. definitely. To be clear, like, the chimps don't speak. This is a much more plausible what if, mm-hmm. where I didn't want to do anything too outlandish that couldn't potentially be plausible. Mm-hmm. So chimps, I found out, don't have the vocal cords to make the sounds. A chimp could never speak. Mm-hmm. because they just don't have the vocal cords to do it. Mm-hmm. But they can communicate in other ways through signing and that kind of stuff. And even amongst themselves through hoots and hollers and different sounds, communication is possible. Mm-hmm. But I want it to be all in the realm of possibility. Because mm-hmm. I felt like in that way, it's harder to dismiss as a possibility. Mm-hmm. It's something that's much more in the realm of what could happen if mm-hmm. someone crazy enough to do it.
Mm-hmm. I could honestly, the way that you portray it, I started to wonder, did this kind of thing actually happen? Because, you never know with science being what it is. And, of course, if you ever watch Twilight Zone or things like that, you always find people doing scientific things that they probably shouldn't do, but they still do anyway because we want to read the stories. But this interesting thing about the book, too, it's told from the perspective largely of a private who is in a unit, and he ends up surviving the rest of the unit. And who comes to his rescue but the guerrilla group?
Yeah.
And he ends up going along with them. They interact with him enough. And the one thing I love about the guerrillas, too, that makes them human and flawed in that sense, they take up a really bad human habit.
Yeah.
And one of the things that it's Private John Francis Clayton is good at, he has a lighter and he can light their cigarettes for them. So he serves a function. Because they already have a medic. They don't need a medic, which he is. But I when they all sit around smoking and stuff, you really get a sense of, how close to humans they really are. And they'll even take on a bad habit.
Right.
To be amongst them.
And obviously in pop culture, it's not even uncommon to see chimps smoking.
Really?
I've definitely didn't know that. I've heard about certain zoos where people flick cigarettes at the chimps and they'll pick them up and start smoking.
You're kidding.
If you put in chimp smoking into Google and search, you'll definitely find a number of both chimps in captivity, but also like a chimp dressed up in a tuxedo smoking a cigar. There's been this, a history of humans taking chimps and dressing them up to look like fake humans and either put them in silly shows or like make postcards out of them. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a little bit of that in the idea, too, is that in pop culture, even it's not unheard of for chimps to kind of serve this kind of, we'll dress him up like a human. Look at the silly little monkey in his human clothes. Mm-hmm. And even just a suit is often called a monkey suit. All of these things slowly disseminate into the idea a little bit. But in terms of the smoking specifically as a function of the story, I guess we talk about this in the new one. There's a little bit more goes into why they smoke.
Okay.
I almost gave it away. You almost
okay.
made it away.
Okay, no.
It's in the new one. It's in the new one.
Okay, good.
There's a function to it, both as a part of their training, and then also the function of giving Clayton something that he's needed for.
Okay.
And in that way, I thought it was kind of that classic almost Jungle Book illusion, where the thing that separates chimps from man is man can use fire.
Hmm.
So they need the weak, lowly human just so he can light their cigarettes.
That was something I liked about it. And they defend him. They really work hard to defend him through the books. And now, why don't you talk a little bit about, because you have, how many gorillas are actually in the team that we meet?
There are 7.
Okay.
You want me to go through them? Goliath?
Yeah, if you would.
Goliath is the leader. Mm-hmm. He's the alpha male. Mm-hmm. He's big and brutish, but fair. Mm-hmm. He's bald and he's got scars on his face. Mm-hmm. And he, he's a tough guy, but he's not a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
His number 2 in command is John Bull, or JB.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of like the prototypical beta male.
Mm-hmm.
He's his right-hand man, doesn't want to be anything more than that. And he's just like the prototypical good buddy.
Mm-hmm.
He's another big guy who favors big weapons, big M60 machine guns.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the medic, who is Dr. Wurzel.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, as we get to know him, he's maybe the most human of the chimps. There always seems to be something that's going on in his head that we don't know what it is, but it's more than just what he's putting on.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to ask a question. I got a question about him. Because he wears an outfit that has his name on there as Dr. Wurzel. He's not really a doctor. He can't possibly be a doctor. But why is he called Dr. Wurzel? Because he's a medic?
A little of that gets answered in this next one.
Okay.
We get more flashbacks to the chimps before their quote-unquote recruitment, and we see where a couple of them, where they came from.
Okay.
Others, there's just allusions to maybe where they came from.
Okay.
But for Wurzel, we do get to see and maybe guess to it.
Okay.
That being said, I do think of him as their true medic, because in the wild, mm-hmm. some chimps have been known to use certain plants as medicine, mm-hmm. antiseptic medicines, or if they get an injury, sometimes they'll get certain types of plants and chew them up mm-hmm. and put them on wounds to help keep them from getting infected and stuff. Mm-hmm. So although he's not your prototypical medic or doctor, mm-hmm. there is elements to his character that are rudimentary in mm-hmm. the medical sciences. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there'll be a little bit more info of that in the new one.
Great. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And the other ones?
So those three are the older mm-hmm. chimps and the little slightly more bigger and just elderly of the chimps. Not old as in elderly as in old, but just older than the others. And then the other four are Fabian mm-hmm. is the kind of cocky, acrobatic, likes to take unnecessary risks mm-hmm. type of guy. Mm-hmm. Pepe is kind of the opposite. He's more reserved and quiet. He's more of like the sniper, the guy who would prefer to take you out before you even know he's there. Mm. And then there's Leaky, mm-hmm. who is a little clumsy, but not dumb. Mm-hmm. And he prefers high explosives. Mm. And the last one is Goblin. Mm-hmm. And he's the runt of the litter. He's the smallest, but he's also very agile. He uses his small stature to its best. Mm-hmm. And he can sneak through little holes and jump. He's also quite acrobatic. So that's the lineup, the mm-hmm. seven dwarfs.
I do want to touch on one thing with Leaky. In the picture in the book, it shows that his nose is running, which is probably yeah. why he gets called
yeah.
Leaky.
Yeah. He has a little bit of a runny nose.
It's like, now, before we get on to the humans, there's also another ape that's involved, or another gorilla that's involved, right. and that's Adolf. Do you want to talk a little bit about him?
Okay, well, Adolf is a baboon mm-hmm. who, when the experiment, the project, was first started mm-hmm. by these German twins who are the professor, the scientists that have been working on this secretly, mm-hmm. before it reached a field test, the first thing they did was they were trying to figure out which animal they wanted to use as a subject for these surrogate soldiers. Mm-hmm. And it started with Goliath, the mm-hmm. leader, mm-hmm. and Adolf, who is a baboon. Mm-hmm. And we'll learn more about their relationship in the third volume, but even in the second volume, you find that they started off as almost like brothers, right. but the competition of the military competition and being forced against each other, they had a falling out. And so the chimps went on and became the primary research subjects for this experiment, but one of the twins felt that there was still something that could be used, that Adolf could be used for, mm-hmm. so he continued to work with Adolf on the side, mm-hmm. and now the chimps have kind of gone AWOL. They're off in the jungle alone now, and there's this platoon of humans with one of the professors, one of the German professors, and Adolf, the baboon, mm-hmm. who are trying to track him down. Mm. And Adolf and Goliath have a little bit of a past.
It's fun that even though they don't speak, you get the sense of the personalities from all the gorillas and how they yeah. interact and stuff. I think that's so well done because, you know, we depend on verbalization a lot of times to understand characters, but you use action rather than verbalization to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like that's one of the great things that comics can do. What I try to do is have two things going at once, like a visual storytelling that is telling you something, and then the words can add to that or can play off of that in some way. They can be ironic or just where you're fully using the form instead of just reaffirming, using words to just say what the visuals are also saying.
Right.
I really try to have as much visual storytelling. And that was one of the ideas also with doing this, working with the chimps as subjects, is not like make them act, make their action scenes be very visual and stories unto themselves. And if they have to use their hands to say something, give them the time, the panels necessary to do that and really tell it both visually as well as, you know, with words.
That's really well done. I was pulled into the story right away. Now, my understanding is, did these come out as individual comics? Because I saw the volumes is the way that I read it.
Yeah. You know what happened is, when I started this comic, mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about doing a Zerk grant. Remember the Zerk grant?
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, which doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. But then after I finished the first 50 pages, I was like, it would be way too hard to both draw the comic, write the comic, all that, and deal with distributors and retailers and trying to get advertising. And stuff. So I was like, well, I think this is looking pretty good. Let me just try to see if a publisher is interested. And I went to Image. And at Image, they were like, I sent them the pages and they were like, yeah, okay, let's do it. And I was like, oh, okay, this is easy. This is great. but like, I really was maybe a little naive in both figuring what I could do as a creator and also like how well it would really sell as coming from someone who's an unknown, basically. The format that I was thinking was 50-page issues that were black and white, which is not the greatest thing. At Image, they always use the same stock for everything. So it didn't really make it cheaper that it was black and white. So I was selling this 50-page black and white comic. The price they put on it was $6. I think it was $5.99 for issue for an unknown, an unknown creator. And so we put three out. And I just started realizing that I couldn't keep up with getting books out quickly enough. Also, the price I thought was a little high for what it was, and I just foresaw a future of it slowly petering out. I also feel like, in general, when you have individual issues, floppies, as they call them sometimes, readers are a little less forgiving if you're not on time.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. People are a little more tend to, like, if something's a couple months late, they're like, you know, I'm over it. I'm on to the next thing. But with graphic novels, you can put one out, and then you can put one out a year later, a year and a half later, and people will come back. And I slowly started realizing, also, like, as I was saying earlier, I had a certain idea for, like, storytelling that was going to be more visual, and so that necessitates having more pages. I realized that what I was really wanting to do was graphic novels. And I talked to Image about maybe, like, shifting to that format. And they were like, ah, no, we can't really do that. So then I was talking to Oni and decided to move it over there.
Good.
I think it was best for the series, but it was really my fault. I mean, it wasn't on Image. I just envisioned something that probably wasn't realistic.
Well, I have to say, Oni Press often puts out what I consider to be terrific product, and they're not necessarily in the monthly comic format.
Right.
So they are more flexible about these things. And I honestly, I thought Gorillaz fit right with Oni Press real well. That's how I got it. I went to a store, and one time I had money that I hadn't spent, and I said to the guy, tell me what's a great book. And they pointed me in your direction.
Awesome.
And I got those, like I said, I got home, read the book, and I was hooked. And so I think that Oni Press is a perfect place for.
Yeah, I mean, things. That's really when I was describing to Image what I thought would be the best format for it. I was basically describing what Oni does, which are these slightly smaller formats, newsprint, black and white. And I think it fit. I also think that the nature of the story, the kind of Vietnam era black and white, I think it looks better on the paper, the more disposable paper than more like newsprint quality paper. It has this kind of like feel of black and white film or like of the era pulp type stuff. So I think that it made more sense. And I don't know.
Well,
I love Image and I would love to work for them again, you know, maybe a different project, but I think it was the right move at the time.
Well, I have to say, too, that black and white is something that most people don't want these days. They want full color.
Yet
I have to say that a couple pages in, I completely lost track of that it was black and white. I felt like I was literally there. And, you know, the fact that it was black and white didn't even occur to me after a couple pages because I was so into the story, I was so into the character. And I think your ability to portray emotion, both on human and on the gorilla faces, was so good that I just was lost in the story. And
well, that's what you'll want to hear.
Yeah,
so thanks.
it, terrific. I mean, I just loved it. I love the way that the humans interacted with each other. Somewhere in the storytelling in the second volume, you get a second human group gets involved.
Right. Yeah.
And their interaction's interesting because there are differences between the two groups.
Yeah.
Because the first group was trying to find the gorillas, they're classified, so they can't really tell this other group. So there's all kinds of interaction and sort of inner conflict between the humans and the groups.
Yeah.
And so it just, I love the storytelling. I thought it was so well put together. And I just, when I saw the second book, I was thrilled. I was like, oh man, can't wait. Second book, take this home.
Yeah.
Same thing, I got home, dove into it. And I got to tell you, the end of the second book is a real touching experience.
Wow.
Won't spoil it here, but let's just say it's war.
Yeah.
And bad things happen in war, and a bad thing happens towards the end of the second volume. And I choked up when I saw it.
A lot of this third book is reflecting on what happened, and more for the chimps, but also for Clayton, and kind of both reflecting back to their past, reflecting why they're fighting, and also in doing so, we get to see a little of these flashbacks to see how they got to where they are, and also how they got trained and stuff like that. So I'm very happy that this third one came out, and I hope that even people who haven't read the first two might get a chance to pick it up. In the third book, I did something that I wasn't smart enough to do in the second book. I have a previously on page.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Where you can read a little bit and get caught up on what came before it. Of course, buying the first two books is really the best way to get caught up on the story.
Well, I was about to say, you can go to your local store. I think that Oni Press will probably have some available. They might be able to have the store.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely, I think they did a second printing of the first volume. So they're in stock. They're at Diamond. If you ask your local comic book store, they're definitely available. And they should also be available on Amazon, too, if that's easier for you.
Mm-hmm. Although, I've seen they're on Comixology as well.
Right. But support your local comic shop and get them to buy one. Maybe they'll buy two more to put on their shelves.
Right.
And someone else will find it.
That's a good thing about it. I highly recommend this book. It's got excellent variety for your reading. It's going to take you someplace and do things that you probably have never read in comics before. At least I had never read in a comic book or in a graphic novel like this. It pulls you in and you care about the characters, be they human or be they gorilla. It's just a wonderful thing. Even the German guy, the scientist who's out there with the one troop, he has to kind of go on and you know, he's there with them. And so they realize that the one gorilla is named Adolf, and they start to wonder, you know, about what that really means is one of the great things about it. There's all this discussion going on, all this wonderful storytelling, and I am dying to get the third book. Unfortunately, we have to wait until May now. As we said, it's May 18, but we'll get that book. I can't wait for it. I'm going to be right after it the day it comes out because I love that. I can't wait to see what you've got in store for the conclusion of this book.
Yeah. Volume 3 right now is in the January previews.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
So now's the time. I don't have the code on offhand, but now's the time. If you go to my Tumblr or my website, which is elrevel.com, elrevel, the code will be there. But now's the time that you can do your pre-orders or ask your comic shop for volume 3.
Be good. And it'll be under Oni Press, too. If you need to find it, go to the middle section, and it'll be under Oni Press, and you should be able to find it there. So it's great stuff. I highly recommend it. It's just one of those great books. This is the kind of thing you look for in comics. You know, you read stories hoping to find a story that's good, and that's what this is, in my estimation.
Thanks, Wayne.
It's just terrific stuff. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of? Because by now you probably have gorillas pretty much in the bank. Are there other things you're working on that we can know about? But you did the bunker. Are there other things that are happening?
No, I'm working on something now, but... Well, you know what? I'm just going to announce it now.
Oh.
The third volume, it was supposed to be the final volume of Gorillas, but it actually just took on a little extra, it took more pages than I thought it was going to be. So we actually split it in two, and there's actually going to be a fourth Gorillas.
Oh, wow.
And so this is not going to be the final chapter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so I'm working on the final chapter now. And I've got a good head of steam. I'm actually hoping that maybe it'll be out by the end of 2016. So maybe there'll be like a summer release of volume 3. and then hopefully maybe a winter release of volume 4.
Oh, wow.
Maybe the beginning of 2017, but not the wait that Gorillaz fans have grown to expect. It'll be a little more, it'll be less of a wait.
Okay, well, I can't wait to see it, because this book is the kind of book that I'm happy that there's actually going to be more coming out too. Because sometimes you want to see the end, you want to get to the end of it, you know, have the story done. But for me, I like the characters and I like the storytelling so well that to have a fourth volume, if it'll come out around Christmas, that'll be a Christmas present for me.
Yeah. So the fourth volume will definitely be the end of the story, but there will be a fourth volume. So
excellent.
So Gorillaz fans, you got more coming after volume 3.
Well, I'm happy. That makes me real happy to hear that. I can't wait to read some of this stuff, because this is a great story, well told, and this is the kind of thing, like I said, that I go to comic shops to find. This is the kind of storytelling I enjoy. So I think, Brahm, you're doing a great job. Keep it up. And if you do something after that, I'll be looking for your name and make sure that I buy stuff that you come up with, because I really have enjoyed your work.
So. Excellent. Thank you. I plan on continuing to have my focus be in creator-owned stuff, you know, my own stories. And that's really what I'm hoping to do moving forward. Gorillaz has taken a long time to finally come to fruition. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm on a good streak, I really want to just nip it in the bud so that I can move on to that next
excellent
project.
Well, it's going to be so worth it, so can't wait. Well, maybe we'll have to talk again sometime when your next project starts coming
out.
Yeah,
definitely.
That would be great to do.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next time when I'll have a special episode which will have three comics creators who have Kickstarter projects going right now that you can participate in. I'm sure you won't want to miss that. But until then, keep reading your comics.